We're going to get started. Let's bow for prayer and ask God to help us here today, okay? Father, thank you for these people that are interested in chaplaincy and taking care of people with their traumas. And Lord, I pray that you bless the words that I speak. May you fill them with power and may they make a difference in people's lives. In Jesus' name, amen. As I already mentioned, I think there's a cost for this class. The class, you will pay me either Venmo or cash or something, and that will be tomorrow if you want the certification. Otherwise, you can just audit the class. You can audit what come in and out, any that you want. But if you want the certification, that'll be tomorrow, and you'll have to take the test. And if you have to miss a class or something, you'll have to go back and listen to the class to get the certification, okay? All right, so this class is a brand new program. This is... There are two classes that we offer in critical incident trauma. And one of the things I was telling this young man back here about was that back in 9/11, when the Trade Center went down, things were happening. First responders were picking up body pieces and putting them in bags and trying to figure out, put this toe with this hand and that foot with this body. And it was horrible. And I got started back when the Oklahoma City bombing, back when that happens, when I got started in this business. And when the World Trade Center came down, Christians were going in trying to help, and they were taking their Bibles and they were getting in people's faces and giving gospel tracts. And these people were literally, and I'm an evangelistic person, reach people for Jesus, but I'm going to tell you, these people were literally numb. They were walking, putting body parts with body parts, trying to figure out who went with what, and the last thing they could process was whatever was written on the religious pamphlet from the church. And so the government came in and said, nobody can come across the yellow tape to help unless they have critical incident stress debriefing certification. That's what you're getting in this class. You're getting a government recognized program that can be used. When I go into fire stations, what you'll find is, if you pursue this, you will find that you will become one of the few in your area that is certified in this, but everybody in power knows what it is. So your fire chief's going to know what it is. Your police chief's going to know what it is. Some of your hospital administration may or may not. It's just getting into the hospital, and I'm one of the pioneers in the hospital industry for getting this into the hospital. We've been working on this since 2012, getting it in the hospitals. And now a lot of residents are talking about it. There is a debate in the psych world whether it's effective or not. But I'm going to tell you, it's just like a school curriculum. It's effective depending on who's doing it. It depends on the person. It depends on what you've learned. It depends on what you do with it, how you handle it, how you connect with people. And it is a tool that's very, very effective. It's so effective that in our area, they're coming now asking for certification in all of our fire, police, and hospitals. We formed a team out of our hospital, CISD team. The hospital now pays me hourly to debrief. They'll call me and put me on the clock. That nursing homes will pay me to come do this. Fire departments, I always do it free, but you know, for fire departments and police, but they'll pay. So it's something, you know, when you're bivocational, if you think about this, you'd be surprised. You go into your hospital, and in hospital, there's chaplains for the patients. Rarely are there chaplains for the staff. So I went and pitched to the administration and said, your staff needs chaplains. During COVID, they said, yes, they do. And during COVID, they opened the door for us. And so now I'm the staff chaplain. I'm the only paid chaplain at the hospital for the staff. And the other chaplains are for the patients. You'll also find this in the police department. I went to the police department. There were chaplains for the jail. And they said, well, those are our chaplains. But the cops would not talk to them. Hello. And so we created a chaplain program for the cops and a chaplain program for the jail. And there are two. And there is a great gulf fixed between the two. They're complete different styles, and the same thing is in the medical profession. They're complete different. You're dealing with people. So if you're a hospital chaplain, you'll go into the hospital and you'll see somebody. You might see them for 2 or 3 days, and then they're gone. But the staff's there every day. They'll know. So now in my hospital, I'll say more about this. Let me tell you a little bit about my, am I turned on here? I'm not turned on. That would help. I'll tell you a little bit about, hello. Supposed to work. Why aren't you working? Don't tell me the battery went dead on me this time. Next. There we go. So a little bit about what I do. I'm a senior pastor at Maranatha Baptist Church in Mattoon. Those are my education degrees. I'm a colonel in the United States Service Command. I'm considered a specialist in critical incident stress management. I've got FEMA command certification. I'm a board certified instructor for Illinois law enforcement. I teach law enforcement officers in ethics and critical trauma. Right now, we're putting together a statewide program. August 25th, it's going to be for all the law enforcement in the state of Illinois, put together a program called Behind the Badge, Loving Your First Responders. And myself and the commander of the Eastern Illinois Law Enforcement Mobile Training Units, we're pioneering this. He said in all the years of law enforcement, he's never heard of anything like it. So I'm pretty excited about that. I've been an instructor for all those things there. I had nurse residency Tuesday. I taught a room full of nurse residents. They put me in the cohorts. Are you familiar with the cohort term? Cohorts, I'm nurse residency cohorts. I teach them every, 2 or 3 times a year. I'm also the board president for the county health department. That's what this got me. This door opened me up to the county health board. And then this year I got elected as the president. So think about that when we talk about masks and all those kind of stuff, all that stuff. Now, I've got the opportunity to help shape policy in the county. It's been pretty amazing. Former advisor for the governor, Indiana Office of Faith-Based Community Initiatives, honorary state fire marshal, and a member of International Conference Police Chaplains and the International Critical Incident Stress Foundation. So that's a little bit about me. This is my family. Tristan's back here. He's my son-in-law. And it's him right here and his wife. Tristan is our youth pastor, head of task, works with me as a chaplain. And his wife is our, Katie, my daughter, is our office manager at our school, our church. This is my wife down here in the front with me. And my wife, Elizabeth. This is Ryan, my oldest son, and his wife, Haley. Ryan went to school here and graduated from here and worked on their television program and then is now the headmaster of our school. These are their two kids, my pride and joy, Haley and Aiden. This is Zach and Amber and their baby, Ellis. And this girl is a foster daughter, and she's at a college in Pennsylvania, finishing up August her degree. She's going to be teaching, running a ranch in our area. A wealthy man in our area has a ranch, and she's going to be managing it and teaching stuff like Sermon on the Mount kind of stuff, how to relate training courses and stuff to Jesus. And the young man here is someone my oldest son has taken in, a foster son he's my foster grandkid now. But he was an 18-year-old boy that was living in his car, and my son took him in, and we're pretty proud of our family. Thankful what God's doing in them. Zach is a deacon in our church and a logger. And of course, Tristan is, like I said, our youth pastor and so on. So that's my family, a little bit about me. What our course objectives today, we're gonna try to understand the purpose and goals of individual debriefing. So in this class, if you're just trying to figure out what's going on, this is a good class for you to be in. We're gonna explain some of that. We're gonna learn when individual debriefing is appropriate, and then we're going to distinguish between individual debriefing and CISD. CISD is critical incident stress debriefing in a group setting. So That would be what we did the class last year. I don't think anyone here was there, but you sit in a circle and you work with everybody that is at a particular crime scene. Tuesday after my nurse residency class, I had to go to the local fire department because a girl had stepped in front of the train and been cut in half and spit out the side of the train. I don't mean to be brutal, but that's exactly what happened. And the firemen were there, and it was the first time they'd ever see, some of those guys had ever seen anything like that. And so we were in the training room at the fire station, and my job is to be a first responder to first responders. We serve those who serve others. That's what we do. And so when my early days, I had a lot of experience and exposure to trauma. As I've gotten older, I've been doing this for 30 plus years, I've stopped going to the scene because I don't want to see that stuff myself. But I would recommend that if you're going to get involved helping with trauma, that you go to some of the events so you know what they're feeling and express. But I wouldn't spend your life doing it because you'll end up with PTSD yourself. Okay? Some terms, I don't know if you can see this, but we have... Oh, this doesn't work with it. The laser pointer does not work with the screen. Psychotraumatology is a developing field. It's a term used to define the study of mental trauma. PTSD is the most prevalent. And as I already mentioned, these folks back here, there is a debate right now in psychiatry and psychology about whether or not CISD works. We have found it to work immensely. We've found it to help in big ways. I'm going to give you some tools today, some stuff with PTSD. Oh, sure. You're welcome to do that. Anybody can move. You can move over here to this side if you want. But you've heard of PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. We're going to talk a little bit about that here today. It's more prevalent than you think. A lot of people, and they're starting to paint it with a broad brush. I'm going to tell you, you'd be shocked at how many people have it. And marriages on the rocks because of this kind of thing. Police officers and so on are struggling. Firemen struggling, nurses sometimes struggling with their relationships because of PTSD symptoms. And so psychotraumatology is one of the terms you want to look at. Crisis, that's another word we're going to talk about. Crisis is an emotional, it's acute emotional, cognitive, and physical reaction to a powerful, maybe even horrible, awful, terrifying, threatening, grotesque stimulus or to overwhelming demand or circumstances. This is horrible. Crisis is horrible. Stress is a response characterized by physical and psychological arousal arising directly from exposure to any demand or pressure on a living organism. Use stress as helpful kind of stress. So you got to understand you have to have some kind of stress to walk, right? But bad stress causes problems in your mind and heart. Critical incident stress is the stress reaction a person or group has to a critical incident. A trauma is an event outside the usual realm of human experience that would be markedly distressing to anyone who experienced it. PTSD is post-traumatic stress disorder. It's formally recognized psychological disorder that may result from exposure to a traumatic event. And then, of course, crisis intervention is a temporary, active, and supportive entry into life situation of an individual or group during a period of extreme distress. It is the first response to first responders. What you are getting today is a lesson in crisis intervention, how, what to do when you face one of these situations. First time I ever had exposure to this, I was pastoring a church in Indiana, out in the country. Brother James, you remember, you were coming on the bus back in those days. And we were in Indiana and the gravel parking lot. And I remember the Sunday night, a police officer came pulling in, gravel thrown everywhere, you know, just lights and sirens out in the country. And I saw the police car and I'm like, what is this? What's going on? And so I went out there, he said, chaplain, get in the car. And I'd just become a police chaplain. He said, get in the car, come with me. We have a critical problem. And so I'm excited. And I told my assistant pastor, you're preaching, you're on tonight. I'm out to save the world, you know? So I get in the car and we take off, lights and sirens blazing. And we get out in the country. I said, what's going on? He says, well, he said, there's been I don't know, some kind of a PI, personal injury. I don't know exactly what's going on. Sounds like a child's involved. And we're going out to the archery range. I'm like, ah, that's all I knew. We get to the archery range, and that's often happens. If you do ride-alongs, you know, often they don't have all the details. It comes from the one on the scene back to dispatch and then to you. And by the time it gets to you, you don't really know exactly what's going on. So we get there and arrive on the scene and open the door. There's screaming, blood-curdling, bone-chilling screaming. And I'm like, well, I was immediately thrown off balance. I walked into the archery and range, and what had happened was a 13-month-old child had gotten loose from his father and went running down to the end of the archery range and started climbing on the target. Well, they all stopped shooting, and the baby's down there, but the problem was the target was loose from the wall, and it's a big target. I mean, this was an archery range. It wasn't just it was old. And the steel that had welded to the wall or whatever had come loose. And when that child got up on top of the target fell over and literally crushed the child. And I'm not meaning to be grotesque. You're going to hear a few things that are difficult to hear today. But I'm going to tell you what happened was the child's head cracked open and was laying there on the ground. And when I walked in, I was completely unprepared for that. Every one of us were standing there. I had a child at home that was the same age. We're all standing there crying. Everyone, cops, everybody. Mom and dad are screaming. Mom was 16. Dad was 19. And I'm standing there thinking, what am I supposed to do? I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do. And it was at that point I realized I needed some more training. And I'm going to tell you, when you engage, you start engaging in the lives of police and fire and so on and hospital work and so on. You find out these traumatic situations and you're not prepared for that. If you go to Bible college, your class in theology does not teach you what to do or what to say. And I began to understand that I needed some help. And so that's what got me started down this path to certify. And then over the years, I found so few pastors even knew what to do. And so I've tried to share as much as I could with everyone what I've learned. In the U.S., 70% of adults in the U.S. have experienced some type of traumatic event at least once in their life. I don't know what it would be, but you'd be surprised if you knew what a family pet dying would do to someone. It's surprising everything that happens to people. There are amazing issues that folks deal with. In the U.S., a woman is beaten every 15 seconds and a forcible rape every 6 minutes. I'm working right now I've become a consultant for a human trafficking organization, and we're building a refuge for women who have been trafficked, and it's all of the people that are in charge of this have been trafficked themselves. One of the young ladies I met, her name is Gwen, and she was from Mauritania. She was 3 years old when she was in a Catholic monastery or Catholic nunnery in Mauritania. And at 3 years old, the nuns started selling her for tricks to some of the people in town to raise money for the orphanage. This is not uncommon in Mauritania. Someone came along to the orphanage and decided after this girl by the time she was 12, she had had two or three abortions the time she was 12. When someone came from the States to adopt her, and they ended up taking her to Haiti, and she was in Haiti for a little while before they could get her in the States. They got her to the States, and the lady that adopted her gave her to a judge who wanted to use her in the same way that Jeffrey Epstein was using girls, if you remember the story. This girl was living with the judge. She spoke French. She called the cops when she started learning English. She called the police, and the police called the judge. And that resulted in more rapes from cops in America. Human trafficking is all around us. It's a problem. It's a big problem. And there are more people affected by it than you would know. And it's been shocking to see that. A lot of trauma around us. 33% of youths exposed to community violence will experience PTSD. 90% of sexually abused children develop PTSD. 77% of children exposed to a school shooting develop PTSD. 35% of urban youth exposed to community violence develop PTSD. Look at this chart. You've already, some of you took pictures of it, but if you experience trauma, you're 4 times more likely to become an alcoholic. I've been called to Three West to help nurses, professionals, one particular who started with a glass of alcohol a night, went to 2, went to 3, went to 4, ended up with a bottle every night, started buying cases of alcohol, and then she started mixing it with drugs and pills because she wasn't getting enough help. And I was called when she attempted suicide, and they caught her just before she died. And by the way, she did come to Christ. We're thankful for that. She accepted the Lord after that. But 4 times more likely to develop a sexually transmitted disease. I'm not sure exactly why that is. 4 times more likely to inject drugs. 3 times more likely to use antidepressant medication. 3 times more likely to be absent from work. 15 times more likely to commit suicide. The suicide that happened on Tuesday, a girl is talking to her boyfriend on FaceTime. She set the phone down and said, "I'll be back." Stepped in front of the train. When the fireman got there, he was still on FaceTime and said, "What happened?" Can you imagine? 2.5 times more likely to smoke tobacco. 3 times more likely to have serious job problems. 3 times more likely to experience depression. 13 million Americans suffered from PTSD in 2020. 6% of the U.S. population will have PTSD at some point in their lives. Many will recover and the symptoms will go away. 5% of the U.S. population has PTSD in any given year. Women are more likely to develop it than men. Veterans are more likely to suffer from it than civilians. Let me just give you, there's 8 criteria for identifying PTSD. There's 8 different criteria. So I want to give you 3 of the 8. I'm not going to give you all 8, but I want to show you what 3 of them will and see if anyone in this room has experienced anything like this. So the first stressor for criteria for identifying PTSD was be if you exposed to death, you were threatened by death, actual or threatened serious injury, or actual or threatened sexual violence in the following ways: through direct exposure, through witnessing the trauma, through learning that someone close was exposed to the trauma, indirect exposure to aversive details of the trauma, usually in the course of professional duties. So can I ask, is there anybody in here that ever experienced, been exposed to any of those things, either directly or indirectly? Anybody at all in here in the room? Okay.
I've worked with a lot of people at the homeless shelter that experienced.
Right. So you've heard stories and so on, right? So criterion B, intrusion symptoms. The trauma is re-experienced in the following way: unwanted upsetting memories, nightmares, flashbacks, emotional distress after exposure to traumatic reminders, physical reactivity after exposure to traumatic reminders. In other words, something is said, like today, I mentioned a few things and some of you, immediately your mind went to something you were exposed to. Anybody like that? That's called intrusion symptoms. Something you've seen, something you saw, something you experienced.
My sister, when my dad passed away, she's still not over. It's been over a year and a half. It has caused a lot of emotional.
Yeah, 100%.
Pediatric. She don't recognize it, but me going to school for it, I recognize that It's just, even though she knows he was safe and everything, it's just
right
that she's holding on to and not getting help for it. And it's caused, you know, a lot of, it does cause a lot of family issues too.
When Tuesday when we were doing this debrief, one of the firemen said that years ago he learned that at a scene, you never look at a face. When he said that, it immediately triggered in my mind several situations and circumstances I was at, faces I saw. Those are called intrusion symptoms. One night I was called out in the middle of the night. I used to dispatch all of the chaplains in Elkhart County, Indiana, and I had 9 chaplains under me, and I was the main call. 24/7. They called me in the middle of the night. I went rushing to the scene. They said, "We think we found a body dead in a house." I walked in the house. The smell was bad. We were putting Vaseline under our nose to try to, you know, Vicks, putting Vicks under our nose so that we couldn't smell the body. To this day, I can still see that bloated body that we had to pick up and put in a bag. And when you say face, I see the face of a dead person immediately. I can right now, as I'm talking to you, I can describe it to you in great detail. Was at an eight vehicle pileup, 2 semi trucks crashed in together. We had to get a crane to separate them. When we separated the 2 semi trucks, we found a car between the semi trucks that we didn't know was there. We were traumatized because we found an empty car seat in the back. We didn't know where the child was, because sometimes a child will get thrown out in a situation like that. Been in places where that's happened. And but what happened when the semi-truck behind had caught on fire, the semi-truck that caused the issue had caught on fire and the truck driver had been burned. When they pulled the semi-trucks apart, his head fell off and it rolled down right at my feet and looked up at me. No, the truck driver. And so when you say a face of a dead person, immediately my mind, I can see his face staring up at me, burnt face. So what I'm saying is those kinds of things, I'm telling you some of my stories. I don't mean to give you nightmares, but I'm telling you this is a very real problem. And there's a reason why I'm telling you my stories, because we're going to get to that in one of the classes. In our last class, we're going to talk about what do you do? How do you dump it yourself? Because you're going to end up with as much trauma as the people you're helping. So you got to figure out ways to manage that. We'll be talking about that in the third class, I think. Fourth class, maybe. So criterion C, avoidance. Avoidance. I come home that night, and I'd been on television. The helicopters had been flying over, and they were filming us. We were holding sheets up trying to protect. There's so many dead bodies in that one, in that pileup. I come home, the kids had seen me on TV, and daddy, you know, and I'm like, why aren't you in bed? I got mad and angry, told them to get in bed. I don't want to talk about it. And the reason I didn't want to talk about it is because I didn't want to remember the faces. Yeah. Joe, you know what I'm talking about, don't you? It happens. And these are the first 3 criteria for PTSD. Not PTSS. PTSS is post-traumatic stress syndrome. PTSD is a disorder. Yes.
I have a recurring nightmare of all the different ones I've seen. And the nightmare, I see all the trauma that has happened to the soldiers before in combat, and the wounds and so on of many different soldiers, but the face in front.
Yes. I had a fireman the other night from another city that heard, and this is when you become a specialist, they'll hear about you. This guy lives over an hour away, and a fire chief that had come to one of my debriefs at a fire says, you need to talk to Haefley. And so they sent him to me. And what had happened was the scene had happened. The car was wrecked, and the lady was in the car. He's first on the scene, and he keeps her comfortable until the EMS arrives. Well, he looks and he sees her, and she looks at him and says, help me. And he said, you know, help is on the way. He couldn't move her because she was stuck. The steering wheel was she was impaled on the steering wheel. So they had to get help there. Finally, when the help got there, they got her on. He helped get her on a board. They got her in the back of the ambulance, and they took her to the hospital, and she died en route. So a few weeks later, he was at a scene. thought, well, you know, this is bad. It was bad. It's this crappy thing. And I, you know, and so he wouldn't think much of it. Well, he's at the scene and it was another accident. And he said they got the person out of the car, put him on the stretcher, brought the stretcher past him. And he looked at the stretcher and there was nobody in the stretcher. Now, he knew there was a person in the stretcher, but he didn't see anybody. He looked over as they put the stretcher he thought was empty in the back of the ambulance. And as he's standing there, he sees this lady that he had been from the other scene trying to climb out of the back of the ambulance, looking at him saying, help me, help me, help me. He was standing up, saw this, and he said, I'm going crazy. Help me. Okay? That's PTSD. All right? It's a very real problem. We'll talk more about it in a minute.
I learned in school, though, if you don't get help, like in a traumatic event, it takes about 2 weeks for PTSD to actually set in. And if you don't get help within that time frame, you can have PTSD or, you know, really bad PTSD, but this debriefing.
It's usually done within 72 hours. The debriefing should be done within 72 hours. Well, let me show you this. These are typical reactions to trauma. Let me, actually, I've got some handouts for you that you can take with you, okay? You don't need to take a picture of that unless you want to, because I have it all on this chart. I'll pass these out. All right, but you're welcome to. Typical reactions to a trauma. Basically, you're going to see there are five river heads or whatever for a traumatic event. Physical, cognitive, emotional, behavioral, spiritual. These are all the five different types of reactions that a person will get to a traumatic event. Okay? And so when you have a traumatic event, sometimes it'll come out in fatigue, nausea, muscle tremors. Anybody here ever get those eye twitches? All of a sudden, your eyes just like, man, this is driving me crazy. And you're almost traumatized by the eye twitch because it's like, you know, you want to wipe it away and it just doesn't happen. It just keeps twitching, twitching, twitching. So that's usually stress related. Vomiting, grinding teeth, weakness, dizziness, sometimes headaches from trauma. Of course, there's cognitive. Cognitive is the thought process. Blame, confusion, poor concentration. Can't sort things out. Poor problem-solving ability. Emotional, anxiety, guilt. We'll talk more about guilt because guilt is a lot of the source of PTSD, believe it or not. We'll talk more about that later. Emotional shock, fear, uncertainty, emotional control problems, depression, inappropriate emotions, apprehension, feeling overwhelmed. Then there's behavioral issues. Recently, I was in a debrief and I talked about alcohol use. And I'm very open about alcohol use. I don't drink alcohol myself, but with fire and police and nurses, they all do, most of them. And so I had this conversation with these guys, and I said, look, guys, if you're used to drinking a can of beer a night or a glass of wine a night, and all of a sudden you find yourself drinking a second one and a third one and a fourth one, you got a problem. Get help, because you're trying to medicate yourself. And the first one isn't working anymore. And one of the firemen looked up and he said, wow, that was big help. Because he was already having trouble with it. And all of a sudden, he said, nobody's ever said that before. You know? Well, you know, I would challenge you. You've got to realize the world drinks to calm themselves and relax themselves. They don't have the Holy Spirit. And that's what they use, the liquid spirit. And that's what they do. And so you need to recognize that and don't tell them, you need to stop drinking. That's not going to happen. Okay? What you tell them is, look, you need to manage what you're doing. And you need to watch yourself. Because if you're taking 4 or 5 or 6 glasses of wine, you're going down a hole. And that hole ends up in suicide. That's where it ends. It always ends up in at least attempted suicide. So, these are typical reactions to a trauma, and these are things you would learn in a critical incident debriefing class, in a group debriefing class. right now we're moving into the individual. What we're going to do is talk about individual debriefing. So individual debriefing is more one-on-one supportive conversation. Obviously, the word individual should have tipped you off to that. It's focused on immediate processing and emotional stabilization. It's often done sooner than a classic debrief with a group would be. So it's someone that needs help. We have at our hospital, we have a hotline, and I have an email that anyone can access in the hospital anytime for if they need to get to me. And I got an email the other day from a nurse in OR, this emergency in surgery. And she had been at an event that weekend, and someone in front of her had collapsed on the floor, and she tried to bring him back to, you know, give him resuscitation, and somebody else stepped in that didn't know what they were doing. And she said he was very aggressive and bullied her out of the way. And so she stepped back and she watched, and the guy ended up dying. So she was having PTSD herself, or PTSS symptoms, because she felt helpless. She knew she could have helped. She might have been able to save the guy's life, but some bully came in. And so she was thinking, well, I should have pushed him out of the way because I could have saved the guy's life, or maybe I didn't do enough, you know, right? So that was what we call an individual debrief. It wasn't a full group debrief. It was somebody I had one-on-one, and we went into the hospital chapel, and we sat down and worked through some of the tools I'm going to give you.
My friend saw her husband, they're Christians, he was mowing the lawn, and he died. She still blames, I did something wrong. I should have did this, and it kept them alive for about a month, and I helped her over the phone.
We're going to talk about that.
With another, I don't know if you know his name, Dennis Streeter.
I know Cal.
Yeah, his brother Dennis.
Okay.
His doctor.
Okay.
And so we did a three-way, because I'm crisis trained.
Mm-hmm.
And I told Dr. Streeter, I got her daughter on the phone. I go, look, and he died right after this. I go, She doesn't understand what's going on, Dr. Streeter. He's already dead. There's nothing they can do. He's dying. They already told her, and they done a do not resuscitate, the whole family, and Sherry changed it. And the daughter was on the other line. Now, Sherry, you gotta know Sherry, she's kind of wacky. Dr. Streeter heard that. He said, Sherry, sit down. I'm going to do a DNR, and you're not going to change it. And she goes, yeah. I go, Sherry. And within 20 minutes, because he was in the room, because I guess he was scared about the full resuscitation. He knew what it was. He passed away peacefully.
Hmm.
But she still, I didn't do CPR right. I go, no, he didn't go to the doctor.
Mm-hmm. We have a lot of that. So what we're talking about. Right.
Everything with. When she blames herself, well, he didn't go to the doctor. Well, he knew his blood wasn't flowing right. He told people. I talked to him about going, and every time she says something like blaming her, I let her know it was his fault because he did not do what he needed to do.
Okay.
And he had people the last month of his life before he had a
okay. Well, hopefully before the day's out, we're going to give you some more tools to help you with that kind of thing. Individual debriefing is important. How it works differently from CISD, it's conducted individually versus in a group. It's flexible and tailored, and it's often earlier intervention. So you're going to be somewhat flexible. It's going to be the situation is going to be different based on what you're dealing with. It might be an old trauma. Some of the stuff I've dealt with has been years. I meet once a week with a ranger, an Army ranger. Every Monday night, I meet with him. And he was in the Rangers for 6 years. And his job was to shoot and clear the way for the SEAL team to come in. And so they would drop the helicopter over here. What do they call those? Is it Chinook or what do they call those? Chinook, yeah. They would bring those guys in, and he would sit on the hill. And he would just spray bullets. That was his job. And anything that popped up, he shot it. whether it was a kid, adult, whatever. He said they were on call. They would be on call for 3 months, and he would have a pager, and they could be at the golf course or at the grocery store, pager rung. He said within 9 hours, they were anywhere in the world. And within 9 hours, I mean, you're talking about fat, high speed. And he said they'd go in dark at night. He said sometimes they'd kidnap or retrieve, an asset or whatever. Sometimes they would kill someone, a surgical strike. And he just sits there and cry sometimes. And he's got pain in his body from it. And we've been talking, and it's individual. And it's long-term with him. Individual. Every week we meet. Every week. And God's been helping him. But that's sometimes it's earlier. Depends. It's tailored to the individual. The goals of the individual debrief. Here's what we're going to do. These are our goals. I've got just about 5 more slides here before we're done here. We got about 10 minutes. Let's try to get through these 5 slides for this section. We want to first normalize. That's one of the biggest things, is normalization. People need to realize they're not crazy. Weird things happen. Your brain plays weird tricks on you. And that doesn't mean you're nuts. I was going to do this later, but let me do this for you right now. I want you to picture something. Everybody in the room, let's do this little exercise. Just to show you what I'm talking about. When you experience a trauma, something happens in your brain, and your brain constructs stories that are interesting. So everybody, picture in your head, picture a lion, okay? Picture a lion. Put a crown on his head in your mind, okay? You got it? Okay, set him across from a chessboard. This lion's got a crown on his head, and he's sitting in front of a chessboard. See him? And your chessboards are all going to look different. But now put a dolphin in your mind. A dolphin is sitting on a stool across from the lion. All right? You with me so far? Dolphin's got a cigar sticking out of his mouth. He's got a top hat on. Looks like he came out of a Monopoly game. All right? And they're playing chess. And the lion says, checkmate, and knocks over the king. Did you see that happen? Are you nuts? That's not even possible. What happened is your brain took all these different pictures, put them in a hopper, spun it together by suggestion, power of suggestion, and you created that story in your mind, and that story is not even possible. That's exactly what happens with PTSD. What happens is things will happen, and you'll take this story and this story and this story. Your brain will say, this happened, this happened, this happened, and it'll jumble it up and feed it back to you. And sometimes you'll be fretting and anxious over things that did not even happen. Let me give you an example. We had a police shooting the other day, and they called me to the town, the next town over. Went down to talk to the cop. What happened was a couple officers stopped to help this young man, and he was unsteady on his feet. And they were trying to be kind to him and help him get to somewhere where he could get some help. And he's like, he started to fall, and an officer stepped in to catch him as he started to fall. And the guy was faking. He reached down and grabbed the officer's gun right out of his holster, pulled the pistol up and shot himself right in the face, this far from the officer's face. Police officer said, I watched the video and I'm so glad I did. He said, because what happened in the video and what happened in my brain are two different things. He said, what actually happened is not what I thought happened. They talk about slow motion. Everything went into slow motion. You know, how your dreams are. What? Do you ever wake yourself up yelling? You're trying to talk in your dream and you're trying to yell out, and then finally you wake yourself up yelling out. I don't know if anybody's ever happened to, it could be just PTSD stuff that I deal with. But you know, sometimes, you know, that those things happen, right? So people see this stuff and they think this stuff, and they, like the guy that didn't see the person in the stretcher, he's like, my mind is crazy. Like, no, it's not. You're not nuts. It's fine. It's a shock reaction. We got to normalize things. So when you're talking to an individual, that's one of your goals. Support is one of your goals. Support emotional processing. Look, they need help. They need somebody to be there for them. They need a friend. They need someone to help ground them. Reduce isolation. Isolation is a problem. A lot of folks with PTSD or trauma related, I'm somewhat of an introvert. People don't believe that when they know me because I'm usually in the middle of a crowd. But I find myself, the more trauma that I experience, I find myself distancing myself, Brother Joe, like sitting in the back of the room, hiding out the back. I want to step back. I don't want to be in the middle of the crowd. I have to force myself to be in a crowd. And that happens. You isolate. When you start dealing with all the trauma, and then you look at other people and you think, I don't know what you guys are worried about. You know, that's nothing. You're like, oh no, my phone's broke. My life is falling apart. No, no, no. It's probably the best thing that ever happened to you. That isn't anything, you know? And you start looking at people kind of weird. It's like, what's wrong with you? You know? And that's not a good thing. It's not healthy, right? So we reduce isolation. We provide guidance and resources. We give them tools. And I'm going to be giving you some more tools. This is an introductory course. So we're going to give you some more tools here in the next few classes. Critical incident phases. So what'll happen when you have a trauma? There's the impact, the emergency phase. This is the initial response. Often that happens. You'll have intense feelings, fear, shock, a sense of doom. A fight or flight, freeze response is a key part of this phase. The body prepares to either confront, escape, or become immobilized by the perceived threat. Some individuals may also exhibit disorganized or stunned behavior. Second phase will be numbing and avoidance. All of a sudden, you're just brain numb. Everything is slow motion. You're just like, I'm just going to say or do nothing. You're numb. Third thing is intrusion. This phase is marked by the involuntary return of traumatic memories. So you start seeing all the pictures and everything. That's your third response. Then you go to hyper arousal and hypervigilance, which is you're really making sure everything is the way it is. You over and over, you know, make sure the kids are in the car seat. Make sure double check. Let me go home and hug, you know, wake your kids up and hug them because you just saw somebody, you know, some tragedy, you know. A quick story. I was in the hospital and they had a baby die, and I was standing there, beautiful little baby, and broke my heart. The mother was wailing, and you know, I could hear her voice. And that afternoon, my son had asked me to watch one of our grandbabies, and it was a little baby the same age. My grandbaby was the same age as the one that had died. And I've been doing this a long time. I know I'm a professional, okay? I'm a specialist. Right? But that night, we put that little baby in a bassinet. My wife slept on the couch. I slept on the floor beside the baby. Every night, all in the middle of the night, I would wake up, see if she was breathing. And every time I looked at her, I saw the face of that other baby. Every time, in the middle of the night. It was horrible. I had to have my own debrief session because that's hypervigilance. Yeah, baby was fine. I would get anxious. I've done so many. Tristan, don't tell the rest of the family I said this, but I have done. don't. But I have done so many child death debriefs. I've sat beside dads holding their babies. This one baby died. I watched him die in his arms. I sat with them. I've done so many of them that when we have the grandkids overnight, I am a basket case. I can't. I'm up all night. I can't sleep. Watching, making sure they're okay. And but anyway, that's a result. Emotional reintegration, short-term recovery. These are a long-term recovery and integration. Let me finish this up real quick. Important reminders. This is a non-linear process. Trauma recovery does not necessarily, you do not do 1, 2, 3, 4, good, you're out the door. That's not how it works. It's non-linear. Sometimes it'll cycle back. There's individual differences. The intensity and duration of each phase can vary significantly based on individual factors, the nature of the trauma, and availability of support. There is support. Support is so important. Access to therapy, support groups, and a strong social support network are crucial for successful trauma recovery. And if experiencing persistent or overwhelming symptoms of trauma, seeking professional help from a therapist or counselor specialized in trauma is essential. So you're like a first responder for first responders, but you might need to call an ambulance. You might need to take them to the ER. You might need to put them in a room. There's 4 or 5 stages after you. Does that make sense? And you need to be willing to call on extra help, okay? Ethical considerations, confidentiality, consent, boundaries, and referral red flags. Watch for red flags and referral. Don't forget, everything you see and hear, it's got to be confidential. You can't share it with anyone. And there has to be consent for treatment, and you need to keep personal boundaries up. Remember this, guys, for example here, you guys, when women are struggling and they're very vulnerable, be careful to keep boundaries, personal boundaries. You cross those boundaries and you're going to get into trouble. Okay? And it can go the other way as well. Ladies, particularly where this, believe it or not, causes you the most trouble would be with teenage boys. I've seen this happen with young teenage boys have trauma and a motherly figure starting to help him with trauma, and they cross boundaries they shouldn't cross, and then we've got a mess.